Coming up next on Passion Struck, when we look at the process of profound human change, we almost always default to the clean, comfortable language of self-improvement. We treat our lives as if they are architectural renovation projects. We tell ourselves that we just need a tighter schedule, a sharper skill set, a more disciplined routine. We think of growth as this neat evolutionary ladder where we simply stack better habits on top of the exact same person we've always been. But true transformation, the kind that alters the literal trajectory of life, it doesn't operate by the laws of addition. It demands something far more radical. If the first stage of navigating adversity is simply enduring the stripping away of our external titles, and the second stage is recovering enough emotional safety to realize that the armor that once saved our lives has now become our prison, then this third stage requires us to do something incredibly terrifying. We have to stop trying to patch up the old self. We have to step directly into the fire and learn how to transmute the raw, painful elements of our past into an entirely new way of moving through the world. Today, I'm exploring why real transformation requires us to stop rearranging the furniture inside our comfort zones and how we can allow the friction of our greatest struggles to change the literal composition of who we are. Welcome to Passion Struck. I'm your host, John Miles. This is the show where we explore the art of human flourishing and what it truly means to live like it matters. Each week, I sit down with changemakers, creators, scientists, and everyday heroes to decode the human experience and uncover the tools that help us lead with meaning, heal what hurts, and pursue the fullest expression of who we're capable of becoming. Whether you're designing your future, developing as a leader, or seeking deeper alignment in your life, this show is your invitation to grow with purpose and act with intention. Because the secret to a life of deep purpose, connection, and impact is choosing to live like you matter. Hello, friends, and welcome back to episode 771 of Passion Struck. We are moving into part three of our special series, Forged in Adversity. If you've been walking this path with us over the past 2 weeks, you know we've been tracking the hidden architecture of the human journey through crisis. We began on that isolated beach on the island, looking at what remains when your resume virtues and performative identities are completely washed away by the tide. Then last week, we went deeper into the prison of protection, examining how the survival adaptations we build during our darkest moments eventually harden into rigid identities that keep us completely disconnected from the people who love us. But this week, we have to address the reality of what happens after the armor falls. Because it's one thing to realize you're trapped inside a suit of iron, but it's something else entirely to stand completely naked in the aftermath of a collapse, looking at the broken pieces on the floor and wondering, who are you supposed to be now? This week on the podcast, I had two deeply profound conversations that illustrated this exact crossroad. First, I spoke with Amy Purdy about her brand new book, Bounce Forward. Amy shared what it was like at 19 years old to be given a 2% chance of survival after a sudden battle with bacterial meningitis, losing her spleen, her kidney function, and eventually both of her legs below the knee. But her story didn't stop there. Decades later, at the absolute peak of her success, she was thrown another curveball that required 10 more surgeries and threatened to strip away her entire identity all over again. And then yesterday, I sat down with Blake Mycoskie, the iconic founder of Tom's Shoes. Blake gave an incredibly raw, unvarnished look at what happens when you scale an empire based on giving, donating over 100 million pairs of shoes to children around the world, while silently eroding on the inside. He opened up about the profound danger of a performance culture that taught him to tie his entire self-worth to a scoreboard, a misdiagnosis that flattened his emotional reality, and the terrifying period of suicidal ideation that forced him to finally go within and ask if he was enough just because he existed. Both of these conversations point towards a singular disruptive truth. Healing is not the replication of your old life. It's an alchemical process. To understand this, I want to take you into a classic story of survival that mirrors the ultimate choice between bitterness and evolution. It's the story of Edmond Dantès, a man who was unjustly stripped of his freedom, thrown into the dark depths of a fortress dungeon, and forced to decide who he would become within the silence of his confinement. It's a story about the difference between modification and true transmutation. Before we dive into it, if this show has ever offered you a sense of companionship or given you the vocabulary to understand your own unseen battles, please consider sharing it with someone who is currently sitting in the middle of their own messy transition. Send it to one person who's exhausted from trying to patch up an old identity that no longer fits their reality. You can find us on YouTube if you prefer to watch, and taking 60 seconds to leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify genuinely helps us reach the people who are out there searching for meaning, healing, and deep human flourishing. Let's dive in. Thank you for choosing Passion Struck and choosing me to be your host and guide on your journey to creating an intentional life that matters. Now, let that journey begin. There is a fundamental misunderstanding in our modern culture regarding what it actually means to change your life. We have been conditioned by a continuous stream of productivity metrics, optimization frameworks, and social media highlight reels to believe that transformation is just a linear equation. We treat ourselves like a piece of software that simply needs a patch, or an engine that requires tuning. If we're anxious, we try to manage the symptoms with a new morning routine. If we're unfulfilled, we swap one high-performing job for another. And then we wonder why we carried the exact same internal patterns into a different office building. This is what I call modification. It is the act of altering the form of your life without ever touching its substance. But the ancient concept of alchemy offers a completely different perspective on human suffering. You see, the medieval alchemists weren't just eccentric blacksmiths trying to turn lead into gold. The true practitioners understood that alchemy was a spiritual metaphor for the transformation of the soul. They recognized a truth that we try to avoid. You cannot create gold by simply painting over the lead. You cannot look at a base metal and say, if I just organize this differently, it will become valuable. The lead has to be broken down entirely. It has to be subjected to intense heat, dissolved in the dark, and forced through an agonizing process of dissolution until its original structure completely surrenders. Most of us resist this breakdown because it feels like destruction. When a relationship ends, when a career collapses, or when an unexpected health crisis leaves you staring into the blank space of your life, your immediate nervous system response is to try to rebuild the old structure as quickly as possible. We want the addition without the subtraction. We ask, how do I get back to normal? Without realizing that normal was the exact environment that created our vulnerability in the first place. The friction you are experiencing now, it's not a sign that your life has been derailed. It's the sign that the alchemical fire has been lit. The discomfort is the heat required to separate your true self from the social conditioning, the performative expectations, and the survival identities you have been confusing with your actual personality. You cannot step into a new reality until you are willing to let the old version of you burn away in the forge. We see this exact tension play out with devastating clarity in Alexandre Dumas's masterpiece, The Count of Monte Cristo. When we first meet Edmond Dantès, he is the embodiment of pure, uncomplicated innocence. He's about to become a ship's captain. He's deeply in love, and his entire future is neatly mapped out along a predictable path of quiet happiness. Then, through a conspiracy of jealousy and malice, he is betrayed by those he trusted most. He's stripped of his identity and thrown into the dungeon of the Chateau d'If, a brutal, isolated stone fortress surrounded by the frozen waters of the ocean. For years, Dantes lives in total darkness, total isolation, and his initial response is the standard human reaction to deep adversity. He resists the reality. He begs for a trial. He rails against the stone walls, and he spends his nights weeping for the life that was stolen from him, waiting for a rescue that is never going to come. He's trying to maintain the identity of the innocent sailor while chained to the floor of a prison cell. He's trapped in the illusion that his life is merely on pause. But true endurance begins when Dantes finally accepts the baseline of his reality. He meets a fellow prisoner, Abi Feria, a brilliant elderly man who has spent his own decades in confinement, digging a tunnel through the stone. Feria doesn't offer Dantes a shallow message of positivity. He doesn't tell him to just keep his chin up. He offers him an education. Together, in the dark, they turn that dungeon into a university. Feria teaches him history, mathematics, philosophy, and languages. He helps Dantes understand the hidden motivations of the men who betrayed him, mapping out the architecture of the world that chewed him up and spat him out. This is the internal shift that happens when we stop treating our struggles as an interruption. The dungeon changes from a place of passive suffering into an alchemical chamber. Dantes is no longer surviving the cell. His mind is actively reorganizing. The raw pain of his betrayal, the grief of his lost youth, and the cold reality of his environment are being ground down and mixed with wisdom, strategy, and deep observation. He's no longer the naive sailor who went into the prison, but he is not yet the count. He's in the middle of the dissolution, that profoundly uncomfortable space where the old self has died, but the new foundation has not yet emerged into the light. But there's a great danger in this alchemical process, because intense heat can either refine a substance or it can turn it into slag. When Edmond Dantes finally escapes the Chateau d'If and uncovers the vast, unfathomable treasure of Monte Cristo, he possessed a level of wealth, knowledge, and power that makes him almost godlike. He steps back into society with a flawless, glittering exterior. He is perfectly composed, highly educated, and capable of manipulating the entire French aristocracy like chess pieces on a board. To the casual observer, he is the ultimate high-achieving success story. But look closer. The Count has built his new life as a massive, elaborate campaign of retribution. He has transformed his raw pain into a weapon, using his brilliance to methodically destroy the lives of the men who ruined him. In his quest to become the instrument of justice, he has closed himself off from the capacity to feel joy, tenderness, or genuine human connection. This is the exact trap that Blake Mycoskie and I talked about yesterday. Blake built one of the most iconic, purpose-driven companies of our time. He checked every single external box of the American dream. He made hundreds of millions of dollars, helped over 100 million kids, built a beautiful family, and bought a massive dream home in Jackson Hole. And yet, when the buzz of the achievement wore off, he was left with a devastating realization. He still felt completely empty on the inside. Why? Because his incredible world-changing drive was still being fueled by a childhood survival adaptation, a desperate need to perform meaning and secure external validation because he didn't intrinsically believe he was enough. Like the Count of Monte Cristo, Blake had modified his circumstances from a struggling young entrepreneur to a global titan, but his mental loop was still organized entirely around old pain. He hadn't transmuted his suffering. He had simply wrapped it in a highly celebrated costume of success. Folks, the real breakthrough doesn't happen when we conquer our external leaderboard. It happens when the armor collapses. For the Count, it was the moment he realized his obsession with control was destroying the people he loved. For Blake, it was hitting a dangerous rock bottom of severe suicidal ideation where he finally chose to stop performing, strip away the internal noise, and face the core wound head on. When we look at the difference between a life that is merely high functional and a life that is truly generative, we are looking at the capacity to tolerate the presence of our history without letting it dictate our future. Real strength is not the ability to look back at your greatest tragedies and say, that didn't affect me. That is not resilience. That is numbness wearing the costume of discipline. True transformation means looking at your scars and choosing to use them as a mechanism for expansion. Think about the story of Amy Purdy. When she first strapped into a snowboard after losing her legs, she didn't find an instant triumph. She couldn't even feel her feet. Her ankles wouldn't bend because they were just metal pipes bolted together. She shot straight down the mountain, crashed, and watched her prosthetic legs fly down the slope completely detached from her body, while her beanie and goggles scattered in the snow. She was deeply embarrassed and utterly discouraged. Her manager even told her later that resilience was about getting through challenges faster. But Amy looked at him and said, no, that's the exact opposite of what this is. Amy didn't try to bounce back to her old 19-year-old self. She didn't try to hide or pretend the obstacle didn't exist. Instead, her problem-solving brain kicked in. She went into a workshop with her leg maker and literally built her own adaptive feet out of wood, random parts, and neon pink duct tape so she could carve a mountain again. She bounced forward. She used the weight of her disruption to innovate a nonprofit, changed the global narrative around disabilities, and became a three-time Paralympic medalist. That is the shift from asking Blake Mycoskie's old exhausting question, what do I need to achieve next to prove I matter, to standing firmly in what Blake calls the radical reality that we are enough just because we exist. It is the understanding that you are made in the image of the divine, and there is absolutely nothing you have to prove to earn your place in this world. The truth about your past is that it cannot be rewritten. It cannot be optimized, and it cannot be managed out of existence through the sheer force of your performance. The raw material of what you have lived through, the seasons of isolation, the sudden collapses, and the long nights spent inside your own versions of the Chateau d'If is the only substance you have to work with. You cannot trade your history in for a different model, but you can decide what that material is going to mean. You can continue to polish the outside of your iron armor, pretending that your rigidity is discipline and your emotional distance is strength, or you can finally allow the heat of your current transition to melt those old defense mechanisms down, freeing up the trapped energy required to build an internal architecture that is genuinely open, grounded, and alive. The transformation begins the moment you stop treating your struggle as an interruption to your real life and start recognizing it as the exact location where your soul is being refined. The fire is not there to destroy you. It is there to burn away the excess stone so that the true masterpiece can finally emerge. Next week, we wrap up our Forged in Adversity series by moving into the final crucial phase of the journey, contribute. We will be looking at how we take this refined alchemical gold and pass it back into a world that is deeply starving for genuine connection and mattering. We will explore what it means to move from individual survival to collective significance, ensuring that our wounds do not just become our private teachers, but the literal foundation for our greatest contributions to the lives of others. And to help us anchor this final step, I'll be joined by my next guest, Eric Zimmer. We're going to sit down and discuss his transformative approach in his new book, How a Little Becomes a Lot. Eric's work is a powerful blueprint for this exact transition, showing how small, intentional shifts in our daily lives ripple outward, turning our hard-won internal recovery into massive generative change for the world around us.
And so how do we live in uncertainty? And so I think the message I would have given my 28-year-old self, and I would give my son also, is to a certain degree is, how do you relax? into being where you are? How do you learn to trust in your ability to navigate? How do you learn to say, okay, I will figure this out. I have skills, I have strengths, I have internal resolve. I will be okay and I will figure it out. That's what I think it would be really valuable to cultivate. I think it's worth cultivating.
If this conversation has helped you reframe the friction in your own life, please share it with someone who might be sitting in the dark right now, wondering why their old maps no longer work. And you can pick up the workbook for today's episode at my Substack at theignitedlife.net. I'm John Miles. Thank you for walking this path with me. And until next time,